Very good. Can you hear in the back, Mike? Very good. So, what we normally do on the evening between 8 and 9 o'clock is answer your questions. So this is the box. If you have any question on anything to do with anything, you can put them in the box here. And I will attempt to answer them on the evening session. So that gives you an opportunity to ask any question about Buddhism or on meditation or anything else. Because what happens is, it's very, especially Asian people, you don't like asking questions in public. So you write them on a piece of paper and they are anonymous. I don't know who asked the question. So you can write anything you want on here. However, if it really is a naughty question, I will look at the handwriting and check with your application to come here to find out who is really responsible. But I will not really do that. So the first little question here, there's only 2, 4, 5 questions here, so I will drag them out a bit. First of all, please can you explain or demonstrate walking meditation? Now, walking meditation is a very easy thing to do. You start one end of the walking path, you walk to the other end, turn around and come back again. That's walking meditation. Very simple. Unfortunately, people like to complicate things and they always want to do something. So that is why that we try and focus our attention when we're doing the walking meditation on the walking. So we know, for example, which leg is moving. Is it the left leg or the right leg? So just like if you're in the army. In Hong Kong, do you do national service in army? In Indonesia? National service? Do you do any army? No.
Professional.
Well, in Singapore you do. That's right. Did you ever have to do marching? Left, right, left, right. You did that? Amazing. So that's what you do here. So maybe because you, Tong, you've been in the army before, when they do a walking meditation, you can sit in there, stand in there in the hall, and you go left, right, left, right, left, right. Just like in the army. But no, you just know with mindfulness whether your left foot or right foot is moving. Which, what that serves to do is to bring you back into the present moment. So your mind is not wandering off into where you're going to go or where you've come from. Present moment awareness, just doing the walking. And as you are calming your mind down more and more with a simple act of walking at a natural pace, then you start to notice more feelings in just one step. It's not just left, right, left, right. You can start to notice the first part of your foot which leaves the floor and the last part of your foot which leaves the floor. Which one leaves first? Is it your heel, the ball, or your toes? Which one leaves first and which one leaves last? And as you are doing that step, you can notice whether the foot goes vertically up or goes back a bit or forward a bit. How does your foot go up when you start walking? And does it go horizontal or go in some parabola, a curve? And when it goes down onto the ground, what part of your foot touches the ground first? What touches it last? And what does it feel like? The sensations on your feet against the carpet or against the wood or whatever else you do, your walking meditation. What does it feel like? So what you're doing is you're coming into contact with the movement of your body. And when the left step is finished, then the right step is the same. You notice all these movements of just one step. Now what happens then is you're focusing on something very simple, very peaceful, in the present moment, and you find you can't think very much, All you're doing is feeling just one step at a time. What that is doing also is increasing your mindfulness, your awareness of walking. I don't know, has there anyone who's trained as a dancer here? Or a classical dancer? Because if you're in dancing, you have to be able to feel just, you know, your muscles and which one is moving, which one isn't. Or if you're a gymnast, you've got to feel these muscles. Feel the movements until you become very, very aware. And as you become more aware of the feelings in your feet and your lower legs as you are walking, it happens naturally. You don't force this. You tend to walk slower and slower because there's more things happening. And you just can't rush it. And so you become very aware of just walking one step after the other. And soon you go into your own little world. So it is so amazing just how many sensations, how many muscles have to move just in one step. And you are becoming aware of all of those. And that makes you incredibly peaceful. And I remember, I like telling stories, when I was just recently ordained in Thailand, almost 40 years ago now, that I used to do after the morning chanting, 1 hour walking meditation outside the main hall. This was in Bangkok. And it would take me half an hour to walk from one end to the other, probably about the same length of this hall. And half an hour to walk back again. Because you got very, very peaceful. That's what happens. And I remember this little kid, about 4 or 5 months ago. He came to visit here while there was a retreat on. And he saw all these people doing walking meditation. And they were all walking so slowly and mindfully. He came back and he told me, Ajahn Brahm, in your retreat center, there's not people there, there's zombies. Because that's what you look like when you're walking very slowly. So be careful, they think there's zombies in this monastery. Have you watched zombie movie? Because that's what it looks like, they go slowly, just like when you're doing walking meditation. That's probably where the zombies come from. They're not real zombies, they're just meditating. But anyhow, so this is natural. And I also remember I was getting so into my walking meditation, just seeing just the right foot just lift up and all this incredible number of feelings going on. Just one foot lifting up. And then I heard a sound. It was like a sound like 100 miles away. Brahma Wang So. Brahma Wang So. And there was this monk who was shouting at me in my ear. Because I'd forgotten I had an appointment. I had to go to a house blessing. And I'd forgotten all about it. And he was trying to get my attention. He was literally only just a few inches from my ear. Brahma Wang So, he was shouting. But for me, you were so into the stillness of your meditation. It was like it was a long way away. And I think, well, what am I supposed to do? And very slowly, you know, oh yes, I should go to a dana. So then I moved my head to look at him. But you know, when you're so aware, there's so many amazing movements, just moving your head from one side to the other. It was so fascinating, I couldn't go fast. It took me a couple of minutes to move my head. And then I saw him. And I said, what? You were so still, you can't go fast. And that was just a nice little experience. And what happens when you really get into the walking meditation, you become incredibly peaceful and still. So because you are focusing on the movement of your legs, no past, no future, no thinking about all sorts of other things. Focusing on these bodily sensations. Make it natural, and after a while you really get into it. Some people prefer walking meditation than sitting meditation because you don't have to worry about aching legs or bad back. You're actually doing something. And that is one of the reasons why it's such an important type of meditation. We've got 1, 2, 3 halls. for you to do walking meditation. And all those halls, you've got these carpets there, red carpets. We chose the color red because we want to make sure that walking meditation is really, really important for you. So what happens when people get on a meditation retreat? They do sitting down meditation. When it gets a bit sore, you want to change, you just go into one of the halls, you do walking meditation. And after you become peaceful and calm, you've had enough walking meditation, you can come in here and do some more sitting meditation. So you can alternate all morning or all afternoon, walking and then sitting, walking and sitting. And it means the stillness, the calm has a good chance to build up its force and energy. The longer you meditate, the calmer you become. And sometimes you cannot sit for too long because you've got aches here and aches there. But you certainly can do walking meditation. So really encourage that while you're here, to do as much walking meditation as possible and change from sitting to walking, sitting to walking. And that way the mind gets very peaceful and very still. But please, when you're doing walking meditation, don't go thinking about stuff. Don't work out the meaning of life. Don't write your autobiography of all these plans which you're going to do when you go back to Hong Kong or Indonesia. You might not get back to Hong Kong or Indonesia. I was trying to find out why it is so cold. It's not usually this cold this time of the year. So I was just thinking, perhaps this is a sign that the earth, the polar axis has tilted. And now the South Pole is in the middle of serpentine. This is the beginning of the end of the world. It's certainly very cold. It's like the South Pole. You got a question? Yes?
Do you put your microphone on?
It's on here somewhere. You can't put it here. Because I couldn't find this string. The string has disappeared. I'm probably sitting on it. Very good. Sound a bit funny. Very good. It's wrong with a robe. Robes fall off because we let go. We're loose. Okay. And anyway, that's a bit better. So I'll fall off again in 5 minutes, but nevertheless. So this is the way that, don't go thinking about stuff. You can think about stuff afterwards when you leave here. But while you're here, see how peaceful and calm you can make your mind. And that's by focusing on the feelings in your body as you're walking. And just see how much there is going on in there. And again, when your awareness gets strong, because you're calming down, you become more aware of stuff, you can actually see so much more in there. And you're just walking backwards and forwards, and you have a very, very, very happy time. I know some people have a difficulty doing sitting meditation, but they really get very, very happy and very peaceful on walking meditation. Some people really like the walking meditation. So you can actually try the walking meditation if the sitting meditation doesn't work. And see which one you like the most. So that's one of the meditations we do here. Is that clear enough for you? How to do walking meditation. Don't go fast, don't go slow, be natural. Oh, I should mention that when you do walking meditation, you put your gaze maybe 2 meters in front of you. You don't look to the left, to the right, up or down. 2 meters in front of you, which means that you can actually see where you're stepping. So you feel safe. You need to see where you're going to go to next. Please don't close your eyes when you're doing walking meditation. Otherwise, you'll bang into the wall. And that's not a good sign when you go home. You have all these bruises on your head. What you've been doing, been to a monastery, they think I've been beating you up. So please keep your eyes open, 2 meters in front, and when you get to the end there, stop, turn around and come back again. It's a very nice, peaceful thing to do. Okay, let's try another question here. Are there any specific suitable objects for sitting and walking meditation? I have talked about the walking meditation. It's the feelings in your feet are the very, very best. And the legs as well. You know, the process of walking. And with the sitting meditation, I was just talking very briefly yesterday, this morning, about just allowing you to relax first of all. And hopefully that, you know, you've had a bit of a relaxing day today, a bit of sleep this afternoon, walking over to Bodhin Yada Monastery, which many of you did this afternoon as well, and having a look at the place. Getting used to the situation here. It's important that you have time to relax, first of all. Now that you've relaxed a bit, maybe you need a bit more sleep, but you should have started to settle in here now. And when you're doing the sitting meditation, the first thing which you should look at is, again, your body, to relax it. If your body is stiff and aching, it's very difficult to let it go and get into peaceful meditation. So the first object of your meditation should be your own body. And please make it comfortable. You know, we do have lots and lots and lots of chairs here. So please, if you are stiff, if you are aching, just put aside your pride and go and sit on a chair. The chairs are specially designed. We made these chairs, we did research to make sure they're not too high, not too low, and that some of them have got the armrests. So that's if people tend to lean to the left and lean to the right in meditation so you don't fall off. If you start leaning forward in meditation, we have seat belts to sorry for. We can tie you on there. Just so you can be comfortable when you meditate. And also, if you want to, you can lean against the wall. No one is doing that. You get the Australians, they always find a wall to lean against. You can lean against the wall and put your foot out if you really want to. So just be comfortable, you know, with your posture. That should always be the first object of your meditation, your own body. And please be kind to it. The Buddha was the most compassionate person ever existed. He didn't want you to be achy or even cold. That's why we got air conditioner in here to make it nice and warm. But you know, there's Indonesians and Hong Kong. We've got to find that balance of temperature just halfway between Hong Kong and Indonesia. So is it warm enough inside? Very good. Is it warm enough outside? Well, you better stay inside. Just meditate here all night. Now, it's warm enough in your rooms. Please, look after your body, look after your health. That's really, really important. And if you want some more blankets, we can always get some more blankets somewhere. And so that's the first thing with sitting meditation. Get your body comfortable. And then the next object of meditation, when you do sitting meditation, is don't go watching your breathing yet. Because too often people go on to something like the breath far too early. And the only way you can keep your awareness on the breath is through force. So relax a little bit more, first of all. The next object of meditation should be the present moment, right now. Do you know what the present moment is? Amazing. I've taught meditation in many countries. When I ask people, just be aware of the present moment, they say, what do you mean? What is the present moment? So first of all, you've got to get used to what we mean by the present moment. When there's no past, you're not thinking about what's just happened. When there's no future, you're not worrying about what you're going to do next. What's left is called now. So first of all, become to recognize what we mean by present moment. What is this present moment? What does now really mean? And once you realize that, then you can focus on it. And that becomes the object of your meditation. Being present, being now. Understanding the feelings in the body which is happening now. understanding sounds. Because feelings in the body, and sounds especially, are happening right in this present moment. No sort of ideas of what might happen in the future. No living in the past. Being right here with everything which is happening. And when you understand what the present moment is, it doesn't matter whether it's a sound or feeling or thought or whatever, as long as you're making sure you're not going off into the past or into the future. Once you have that as your object, what it truly is you are establishing mindfulness. You're creating awareness. Because if you haven't got strong enough mindfulness and you start watching the breath, you're not ready for it. So you create enough mindfulness first of all by staying in the present moment, that then you go looking for your breath. Or for many monks now, like myself, I never go looking for the breath. I create mindfulness in the present moment, and after a short while I can be aware of my breath. It happens naturally. And then you can start watching your breathing. But don't go on to it too soon. Otherwise you can't stay with it. And you only have to struggle. And you get disappointing. You know, you're trying to watch the breath, and after a couple of minutes you're thinking about the football, the World Cup. Or you're thinking about, you know, the stock market. Or you're thinking about, you know, your boyfriend. Or whatever you're thinking about. You don't stay there because you went on to it too fast without preparing yourself. So get the mindfulness up first of all. And then you can start watching your breathing. Remember, you're here for a long time, 6 or 7 days, so take it slowly. Don't rush. If you get enlightened today, what are you going to do for the rest of the days you're here? So drag it out a bit. How to do walking meditation? Wow. I've already answered that question. So it's very easy. I think I've already mentioned that. Does the practice of one who saw the Dhamma differ from the Putujjhana, more contemplating cause and effect? Okay. We're saying here about the practice or the stages of enlightenment. But are these stages you attain, or are these stages of you disappearing? I just came back from Sri Lanka. I'm very popular, very famous in Sri Lanka. So much so, it's even better than Indonesia and Hong Kong. So when I get to the airport in Colombo, you don't go through customs or immigration. There's a fellow from Foreign Affairs waiting for you, Ajahn Brahma Wangso. Please come this way. And they take me to VIP lounge. And I go into VIP lounge and they give me a nice cup of tea. And as I'm drinking my tea, someone comes, "Your passport, sir." And then they take my passport and I carry on drinking my tea. And before I drank my tea, "Here's your passport stamp, sir. Have a wonderful stay." And then you go out of the VIP lounge into your car. No customs, no immigration. That is the only way to travel. Until you get back to Australia. What do you go to Sri Lanka for, sir? How long? Let's have a look in your bags. So I'm not a VIP in Australia. I don't get into the lounge. But anyway, it's nice when you have it. But when I was in Sri Lanka, they asked me in a question. And it was coming from a monk. So I had to answer it. And he said, "Ajahn Brahma Wangso, are you an arahat?" And there was a TV camera right in front of me. So I gave the answer. If you can tell me what part is an arahat, is it the body, you know, the five khandhas in Buddhism, it is the body, is that the arahat? Is it the vedana of the feelings, is that the arahat? Is it perception which is the arahat? Is it the will which is an arahat? Is it one of my consciousnesses which is an arahat? If you can tell me which one is Ajahn Brahmawangso, then I can tell you whether Ajahn Brahmawangso is an arahat or not. I've got a lot of smart answers like that to get out of answering tough questions. But that is actually what happens. You know, you're not trying to attain anything, because who can attain anything? There's no one there. You meditate to let go, to disappear. So the more you disappear, the easier it is to meditate. Do you ever get upset if you make a mistake? Do you ever get embarrassed if you make a fool of yourself? I don't. There's no one to make a fool of. There's no one here. It's not me. I didn't do it. It's that Ajahn Brahmawangso. He did it, not me. I take no responsibility. And I like this so much. Whenever I make a mistake, I always like sharing it with others. All the great mistakes which I've made in my life. And it's fun. It makes people laugh. Here we go. Some of my mistakes. What's one of the mistakes? Oh yeah, when I did a funeral service. This was over in Subiaco. I remember this. It was a Sri Lankan disciple. And one of their parents died. I never knew the parents, but you know, he would come to the temple. He said, Ajahn Brahm, can you please, you know, do the funeral service for me? One of my parents died. And you know, these Sri Lankans got very, very, very long names. So long names. Actually, I heard this, that even, you know, because many people in Hong Kong like horse racing, they even give these long names to their horses in Sri Lanka. And it's not just, you know, Red Rum or Arkul or something. It's like Kumarasamaga Singawa Sompabop or something. And it's such long names. You know, people, you know, Hong Kong, you know when they call the race and they get to the finishing line, and it's Red Rum, and it's Pumahepa, and this poor commentator couldn't get the Sri Lankan names out quick enough, and he had a heart attack and died. The names were too long. But sometimes they have funny names, you know, in Australia. Because one horse, he was named, you know, Hoof, you know, from the foot, and Hearted, you know, and I like, you know, being kind-hearted or good-hearted. And so that was his name, Hoof, Hearted. And of course, that sounded okay, so they were calling the race. And it's who farted. And they realized they shouldn't have given the name like that to a horse. If you don't understand that in Indonesian, you have a hard time explaining that afterwards, Handaka, when you translate that into Bahasa. You know, who farted? Okay, I think you probably understand that later on. So anyway, how did I get onto this from the question? But anyway, in Sri Lanka. Oh yeah, that's right, because I was just over there. And so when you realize that being it's stages of attainment are really stages of disappearance. The less you are, the more attained it is. Which is one of the reasons why people can say, you know, are you this, are you that? I say, what do you mean? There's nobody in here to be it. Any of these things. You are disappearing. And because you're disappearing, it's, of course it's so easier to meditate. You have less things, less of the past. Oh yeah, the reason I said this was my mistake. So at a funeral service, you know, these are serious things, funeral services. Everybody is very somber, wearing black. I'm the only one not wearing black, wearing brown. And then I go up there and, you know, I greet everybody, say thank you for coming today. We're here to do the funeral service, you know, for the mother of my disciple over here, whose name I did remember. And I said, we've come here, and we're doing a Buddhist ceremony. And before I could get any further, this woman at the front stood up, this old Sri Lanka woman. And she looked at me and she shouted at me, it's not me who is dead, it's my husband. I got the wrong one. You know, it was a 50-50 chance. and I got the wrong one. So after that, you couldn't be serious anymore. Everyone burst out laughing. Because you do make mistakes sometimes. I get the wrong person. And says, my husband's dead, not me. And anyway, other times, I really got into trouble once. There's Thai people. You know, some of these Australians, you know, they're 60 and they marry these young Thai girls. You know, it's only 20 or 22 and they're 60. And so I was doing a marriage for these in Nolamara temple one day, and so I saw this young girl, came in, a young Thai girl with this old Australian, and I said, oh, are you the father of the group? That was the wrong thing to say. He said, no, I am the groom, he said to me. So you make mistakes like that, but it's fun. When you share with other people, they laugh as well. So whenever you make a mistake, please tell everybody. It adds to the happiness of the world. Instead of being embarrassed, please share your mistakes. You know that Handaka has brought these... what's a nice way of calling them? These little sprays you use to wash your bottom, you know, in Asia. You know, by most toilets, you know, you get them out and you can press a button to clean your toilet. When I first saw one of those in Thailand, I thought, this is how you clean your teeth. Well, I was a Westerner, you know, quite low, it was a Pule, that's Kuai Lo, is, you know, Hong Kong, devil man. So I don't know these things. So anyway, I thought, that's really nice, clean your teeth, it's very high pressure, so you don't have to use a brush. But anyhow, so you make mistakes like that, so you laugh at them, instead of feeling embarrassed about them. That's a sign that your ego is disappearing. And the more your ego disappears, the closer you are to enlightenment. So that's one way you can tell a person's enlightened, whether they are conceited, whether they're embarrassed when they make a mistake, or whether they can laugh when mistakes are made. That's one of the nice things I always remember with my teacher Ajahn Chah. When anyone ever made a mistake, he wouldn't get angry. He would just laugh. And stupid monks like me, we cause so much happiness to our master. That's probably why he liked having stupid Westerners around. We made him laugh so much with how stupid we were. Because we were supposed to be very refined. We were supposed to be highly educated. And he couldn't believe how stupid we were sometimes. Little things like the time when I asked for some soap. And the word for soap is sabu. And I went up to him and asked for some sapo. It's very close together, sabu, sapo. And it didn't make any difference to me, but sapo meant pineapple. And I always remember this. He asked, what do you want a pineapple for? I said, to wash. He didn't let me forget that. For weeks he was telling all the visitors, oh, you know, in England they wash with pineapples. Very strange culture. But that's the way, when you make a mistake, laugh at it. Don't get conceited or think that you've made some big, terrible mistake. That's a sign you're on the path. You don't judge yourself or worry what other people think of you. You just, you know, if they do see something funny, you make them laugh, tell about it. So that's a sign. That's how a person who's seeing the Dhamma, just how they think and how they act. They're not trying to attain things. Look, all your life you've worked really hard at school and university, you know, and work trying to attain this and attain that. Has it ever got you any happiness? So instead, here, just disappear. Nothing to attain. As I said this morning, you've arrived, you're here, you've got enough. So enjoy. You've got nothing else to attain. Not trying for jhanas, not trying for enlightenment, just not trying at all. Letting go of all trying, just being. Now that's meditation, and that's how people should practice. That's how arahats practice. They're not trying to get somewhere. They've been there and done that. Just being here. Letting go. Opening the door of your heart to this moment, as it is. Not criticizing it. This is good enough. In fact, this is as good as it gets. No work you need to do. No people you need to teach at university. No jobs to be done. Isn't this wonderful? Total relaxation. Total freedom. No one is judging you. Brilliant. So anyway, that's what you do. Robe is coming off again. Letting go. How's that? Can you hear? Okay. Here we go. Rit dear Ajahn Brahm. Aha. Karena sayatidak panda bahasa ingrid. Mom handaka babai hati merang ka. I'll give up. It's in Bahasa. Come on, Handaka. Come, you can read it. It's in Bahasa. Very good. At least he didn't try in Chinese. Can't read Chinese. Don't know what it means. Okay, what have we got here? As long as it's not rude. Yes, yes, yes.
Since I cannot speak English,
yes, yes, yes. 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 Yeah, you've done already. Very good.
But the question is, for the meditation, walking meditation mantra, mati bhakti.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I say for sure. If the person is ready to die, is this mantra is still suitable? Because there is no effect that can shake one's feeling.
Oh, if they're ready to die?
Yeah, he or she is ready to die, but still
walkable or not. Okay. As I look in here, there's no one here ready to die. It's okay for you. You're not old enough yet. Or are you old enough to die? When are you old enough to die? As soon as you are born, you are old enough to die. Who knows who's going to die next? That's why there's 60 people here on this retreat and a few hangers-on in the back. When you have, let's say, 70 people, that means by this time next year, according to statistics, at least one of you will be dead. That's statistics. Which one is it? And don't just look at the old ones. So one of you is going to be dead next year. Who is it going to be? Ha 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 ha. Not me. Is it going to be you? So sometimes when we think of death like that, it actually is not scary at all. Now I'm really, really, really trying to die soon. But otherwise, I mean, you just squeeze all my energy out of me and you won't let me retire. So the only way I can have some rest is actually to die. Isn't that a good idea? No, because usually, look, how old do you have to be to retire in Hong Kong? 60. 60? 60? Okay, I can retire. I'm 63 now. What about in Indonesia? 55, I should have retired 8 years ago. You make me work really hard. So I think the only way I can get some rest around here is to die. Wouldn't that be nice? Maybe I can pretend to die. And anyhow, I think I told a story over in Indonesia. Just imagine, this is a little imaginary exercise. imagine that you got a letter in the mail saying that you have won either the Indonesian lottery or the Hong Kong lottery. Do you have a lottery in Hong Kong?
Yes.
What's the first prize? How many million US dollars? 1 million minimum. Wow. But this is a special lottery you win in Jhana Grove. That you have won a free because, you know, of a special 5 year, is it 5 years we've been open now? 5 year anniversary. The one person will win a free trip to Los Angeles, flying first class on Garuda. Now maybe Cathay is much better. is that true? Garuda? Okay, whatever. You can make your choice. First class on either Garuda or Cathay Pacific for two, and staying in 6-star hotel in Los Angeles with a dinner with your favorite movie star every evening, and $1,000 to spend each day for each person for 2 weeks. And that is your prize. And you've just won that prize. Would you be happy? Oh, come on, be honest. Of course you'd be happy. You just won a prize. Free tickets to LA, flying first class, 6-star hotel, meeting movie stars every evening, $1,000 for you and your partner to spend every day. And you'll be just looking forward to that. When it says only 2 weeks to go, you say, come on, hurry up. Only 10 days to go, only 7 days to go. The day before you're going to leave, you'll be so excited you probably won't be able to sleep that night. Now, what is better? Going to Los Angeles, flying first class, 6-star hotels, meeting famous people with $1,000 to spend every night, or going to heaven? Which is better? Heaven is much better. So if your doctor comes along to say, you've got cancer, you've only got 2 weeks to live, it's like better than winning my prize. Only 2 weeks, can't you make it 7 days, please, doctor? Because you're going to heaven soon. The night before you're about to die, you'll hardly be able to sleep. You're so excited. I'm going to heaven tomorrow. Woohoo! Why can't people think like that? They say, oh, I'm dying. I don't want to die. You're going on holiday, having a nice time. Otherwise, what's in front of you when you get really old? Haven't you seen old people? Why do people want to live that long? So, what I have seen, I said this the other day in Nolomara, when you see old people, they can't see, their eyes go. Their ears, you can hardly hear you. Now their hands shake, and their feet are very weak, they have to use sticks to walk. When you get old, everything starts to fall apart and get weaker and weaker and weaker, except for one thing. The mouth. Old people's mouth gets stronger every year. It's true, isn't it? The old grandma, she can talk and talk and talk. She can't see, she can't hear, but my goodness, she can talk. You had a question, go on.
What's the meaning of life?
The meaning of life. This was, no, Krishnamurti. He said, meaning of life? Life hasn't got a meaning, life is. What, sorry?
Your version of it.
My meaning of life. The meaning of life is to discover the meaning of life. And once you have discovered the meaning of life, you know the meaning of life. Simple. Okay. I'll try again. The meaning of life is the meaning you give to life. That's more practical. So life hasn't got a meaning, but you give it meaning. So what meaning are you giving to your life?
I don't know, we talk a lot about death.
Yeah. But death is only...
Like the journey of preparing for death.
Oh, death is only just a break, a holiday, just a parole from jail. You go back there again afterwards. So that's a nice thing about, like, learning about death is nothing. You've been there and done that many times before. That's why I keep saying Buddhists are the experts on death. Christians know nothing about death. They only die once. We die many times. So we know more about death because we've got experience. We get reincarnated. So what do the Christians and the Jews, Muslims know about death? They only do it once. We keep coming back again. So anyway, so instead of what's the meaning of life, what's the meaning of death? It's a much nicer question. And death has the meaning you give it. So people in the West, they give death its terrible meaning. They go along and say, oh, someone is dying, and oh, it's so bad, they're dead, or is it really bad when people die? It's a release for people. You know, their old age, their pain, their suffering is gone. So, you know, the Irish have the best idea. When someone dies, they have a party. Do they have that in Hong Kong? When someone dies, you have a party. Woohoo, Jerry is dead. Gerald is gone. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha. That's the right way to do it. Have a party.
That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. That's why they say, you know, the Irish, they always like drinking lots of whiskey and get drunk. That's the old joke. What's the difference between an Irish marriage and an Irish funeral? The only difference is in an Irish funeral, there's one less drunk. That's the one in the box. Anyway. So, to celebrate death. And quite frankly, being, you know, sort of not funny anymore, when somebody dies, I only feel sad when it's been a person who's wasted their life. They've been selfish. They just looked for themselves. They haven't really given much to society. They haven't really served. They haven't made a little bit of difference in the lives of other people. When a person like that has died, just selfish and just whatever they wanted, they just got for themselves, haven't really been kind, generous, compassionate to others. Now I think, what a waste of a life. When someone is, you know, because I do lots and lots of funeral services, and they have this custom now of doing these eulogies, where the relations stand up and say something about the life of the person they're just celebrating. And that's just such a beautiful time of a funeral service. All these wonderful memories they have, you know, of the people they've lived with and loved for such a long time. And when they start talking like that, they realize most human beings are very kind, good, loving people. And I enjoy listening to a summary of their life. And I'm not sad at all. I think, wow, what a wonderful life that was. But every now and again you go to some funeral services and hardly anyone turns up. You know, because basically they haven't really been kind to anybody. They haven't really cared. Even their family don't like them. And so hardly anyone turns up. And that's really sad when I do those sorts of funerals. It's not how old or how young they are. It's not the quantity of life, it's the quality of life. So even like young people, they died, but they really made a big difference to the lives of others. Say, well done. You did a good job. So that's, you can find out by going to lots of funerals. That's where you find the meaning of life. Because people tell you it all the time. This is what life really means, especially to others. And at the funerals, they never tell you how much money they made. They never mention that at all. They never mention just how many times they went to the Bahamas or how many Porsches they had. They never mention that at all. All they ever mention at a funeral is just how kind, how good, what a wonderful friend they were, what a great dad, father, mother, whatever it was. That's what they always talk about. And that is the meaning of life. Summarized at the end of life in the memories of the people they live with. So what do you want to be remembered as? Da 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 da. Because I said, by this time next year, at least one of you will be dead. You better start soon. No, you're all very good people, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get in here. So that's the meaning of life. Any other questions about meditation or something? The other thing I hope you've got from just one day staying here, you see just how much energy I put into my talks, even into sadhu, 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 because one of the problems with meditation retreats is sometimes people get so quiet, so still, they all fall asleep. So by stimulating you, making these talks interesting, and changing my voice, putting energy into speaking, telling a few funny stories, it keeps you interested, so the Dharma can actually get in there. And also that when you do get nice meditation, you get energy, and with energy, happiness. One of the things in these retreats I really emphasize is the importance of happiness. Of smiling. You are allowed to smile when you meditate. And because many of you are still very dull, I'm going to give you an exercise tomorrow morning when you first wake up in the morning and you go to the bathroom and you do your letting go. After that, please stand in front of the mirror in your bathroom and do the 20 push-ups. So you can actually start them now, please. Fingers, please. Side of the mouth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Do the whole 20. 8, 9, 10. About 10. You can do the other 10 when you get back. Exercise the smiling muscles. Number one, it makes this whole retreat happy. Number two, you'll find you have much deeper meditation. Happiness is a cause of stillness. And it stops the mind getting negative and starting thinking and fantasizing or escaping or getting angry. When you get happiness, don't you feel good? It's much easier to be still then. So if you get really tired during the meditation, really depressed, oh God, another 5 days of this, I'm going to handle this. Find a mirror, 20 push-ups, quick. Look at yourself, laugh at yourself, and you find meditation is easier, life is easier, happiness is easier, health is easier. If you've got a cold, or you've got feeling sick, this is a problem. If you come from hot countries and you come into this place, be careful of catching colds. And I remember in one of the Chaching books, you know, one of the stories I said about how I was a student, I was studying in Durham University in the north of England. It was only because my girlfriend was up there, that's the only reason I went to that place. And it's really cold in the north of England. I had this terrible flu one day, so bad. I'm usually very healthy, and I don't sort of take sick leave, you know, very easily. And I felt so bad that I was in the house with other students, I just could not get out of bed. I was going to miss all the lectures that day. So everyone else left to go into the university, and I was laying in my bed feeling terrible. Not just feeling terrible, just all this gut was coming out of my nose, you know, sneezing, and the eyes were watering. You know, you were really sick, you know, with a fever and with a bad cold and coughing as well. You know, the physical symptoms were there. And then I heard that somebody knock on the door of the house we were sharing, and they just wouldn't stop. So I was in my pajamas, I just struggled up, and I just staggered to the door. What do you want? And they said, anyone here by the name of Peter Betts? That was my name. I said, yeah, that's me. We've got a delivery for you. For me? What? And it's your hi-fi system. In the day before iPods, these tiny little things. It had all this big equipment, about 4 or 5 boxes of electronics just to listen to some music. And I sent it from London. Now it was arrived. Thank you very much. And I signed for it, and I took it up to my room, and I unpacked it all. It took maybe an hour to unpack and connect it all up and plug it in and put my first record on, which was Mr. Jimi Hendrix. I used to love that stuff. And now even, I think I Have I showed this to you? Actually, somebody took my photo to Photoshop, and they've got this photo of me, the head of Ajahn Brahm, and the body of Jimi Hendrix. And it looks like Ajahn Brahm playing the guitar. I showed that at like one of the New Year's Eve parties. Did you see it there? Yeah. It's Ajahn Jimmy. Ajahn Jimmy Brahm. But anyway, as soon as I started playing that first track on that record, I had to stop because my cold had vanished. Now, nothing was coming out of my nose. My throat had cleared. My eyes weren't watering anymore. It totally vanished. And that was really weird, you know. But now I understand just the importance of happiness. Now, that was obviously worldly happiness, just, you know, being excited. Now I could actually play my favourite records whenever I wanted because my system had arrived from London. But that degree of happiness and excitement had actually cured, you know, a disease like it was a real cold. It wasn't imaginary, you know, just all the stuff was coming out. That is how powerful happiness can be. You know, to cure colds, to cure fevers, to cure cancer, even to raise the dead, I don't know. Maybe I should make the coffins laugh and then maybe... No, but anyway, at least it makes you very healthy. And so please create happiness during this retreat. And if no one else creates happiness for you, if I don't, then look at your face in the mirror, 20 push-ups. And that will soon make you laugh, and that will stop colds more than any antibiotics or anything else. So please make this a happy retreat. And that's why also you can see the way I react even already, that, you know, with somebody, I'm really senior now as a monk, I sometimes rush to the door and open the door for you, playing around. Please be playful as well. So, you know, when you're eating your lunch, you know, you're sitting next to someone, if you see something on their plate you like, get your food. Thank you very much. Sharing! Play around a bit, have some fun, because that's important when you're meditating together, to get a sense of community together. And when you get that sense of community, that positive energy inside, when you come in the hall, it's very easy to meditate. No, it's not just about how we meditate, what we should be watching. It's about the attitude of mind you create before you even start meditating. That is crucial to success. If you're really miserable, gotta meditate again, you're gonna get nowhere. If you're gonna say, shut up everybody, this is my meditation, be quiet, you're gonna get nowhere in your meditation. But if you've got this beautiful, kind mind, you find meditation so easy to do. So remember, get the attitude right. That's part of my job, but you have to share it by smiling at everybody. Okay? Very good. Any comments or questions before we finish off? I managed with only 4 or 5 questions to drag it out for an hour. Okay, very good. So, the night is still young. If you're in Hong Kong, it's a Saturday night, what time would you go to bed? If you were in Jakarta, would you go to bed at 9:15? 2 a.m., yeah. So, can you please, Danny, can you lock the doors? We now meditate till 2 o'clock. No, come on. You can go to bed and get up early instead. So if you feel you've got energy, please carry on meditating. If you want to get a cup of tea or orange juice, that's available any hour of the day or night, I hope, isn't it? Yeah, you know where the kettles are, you know where the fridges are, please just help yourself in there. And if you feel you need a rest, take a rest. If you want to get up early, you can get up early. If you want to carry on meditating here, you can carry on meditating here. This place is for you. So make use of it, enjoy it. Don't go too hard, don't go too soft, find a middle way. And at the same time, you know, you can always meditate in your room. If you don't want to do sitting meditation or walking meditation, you can do what I call meditating flat out. And have a nice rest. For those of you who want to get up tomorrow morning early, at 6 o'clock, I'll be used to get up about 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock we have some chanting, And at 6:45 we have breakfast meditation. And after breakfast meditation at 8 o'clock we have another talk. That's tomorrow. Okay. Interviews as well. It's not interviews, it's called interrogations. If anyone wants to be interrogated, no, interviews is where if you've got any personal questions about the meditation, about Dhamma, just between the two offices, that's where I do the interviews. And